I'm going to start in John chapter 13. John chapter 13 tonight. Looks like a lot of notes, but I just wrote big and fast, and I only wrote on one side of the paper, so. Yeah. Just fold them out there like playing cards. Well, I just want to talk for a little bit here about this concept that you hear so much about nowadays. And, you know, it's taken out of context so badly, but by the people that are preaching it all the time. It seems to be like the mantra of the millennial age and the Gen Xers and, you know, these last 35, even 40 years worth of people that have come into this earth. And it just seems like this is their gospel now. And this thing that you hear them talk about all the time about you need to love yourself. You know, you can't love anybody else until you love yourself. You can't be for other people till you be for yourself first. And, you know, it's a really screwed up idea and an ideology that they're preaching there. The idea of it, you know, bare bone, just like at face value, I can see where they're coming from. But when you listen to what they're saying and you see what they want you to do, it doesn't work. Don't work. So I want to look at a couple things here about it. In John chapter 13 and verse 34, find my place here. Jesus said, "A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another, as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." You know, Jesus had a different idea about what we're supposed to do. If you just type in on your word search on your Bible app there, love one another, you got to look at all of the words that were said, all of the different scriptures that was talked about. 1 John, Timothy, John, it's all through the New Testament where the commandment from Jesus and then what they preached from then on was you need to love one another, you know. There wasn't one thing in there about loving yourself. It was love one another. Oh, no, it's raining good. And, you know, if you turn over, and I'll just read it here. I'll flip over here to it because I got it marked. But in 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting in verse 1, it says, "This know also that in the last days perilous times shall come." We've heard these verses a bunch of times. "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away. For of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women, laden with sins, led away with divers lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth." Dad preached about worship Sunday, about worshiping God in spirit and in truth. And it's like a two-part epoxy. One without the other does not work. You can have a head knowledge of the truth and not have the Spirit of God, and it ain't gonna work. You can know all about the Spirit, but not be doing it in the truth and not have the truth, and you're out to pasture, you're out in left field, it ain't gonna work. And so I want to just talk for just a minute. I mean, our devotion this morning at home was about this, and it was just a thought I had, and I don't know, I never have notes or nothing like that when we have our devotions, we just talk. And, you know, it's an interactive thing. I mean, everybody adds to it as we talk through it or whatever. If you have a thought, we just talk about it. I wouldn't be completely opposed to it being that way tonight. You know, it's a little bit different. It's Wednesday night, and, you know, it's just a little bit different gear we're running in here. But this isn't a concept that you know, my kids are growing up in this world. Your kids are going to grow up in this world, and yours too. And this is what they're going to be preached to by the world. The philosophy of the world is in everything that you hear. Every self-help thing that you hear, everything, and it's grew and seeped its way through the cracks and the doors and into the churches and into the minds of the preachers that came from the seminaries where it had creeped and oozed into there too. And now they stand in their pulpits and they preach the same exact thing as the world's preaching. It's the philosophy of the world. This philosophy that the old ways that old timers did things, and the way that, even way back in the Bible, the way that it'll even get as extreme as saying things in the Old Testament are not relevant to us anymore. You know, Dakota shared that thing with me yesterday about a Baptist preacher that's come out now saying that, you know, that the Bible is full of error and it's irrelevant and we can't trust it anymore because it's just not, it just don't include the gay people in our acceptance, see? Hogwash. You know, it's just one more step down the ladder into the dark abyss. And Jesus said it would be that way. But what started the list in 2 Timothy there that I just read? They're lovers of themselves. The world says, you can't be any good to anybody. You can't help nobody. You can't be any use to anyone until you invest in yourself, until you love yourself. Well, the world, we know, it's just a precept that we know that just is basically a standard for us. Is that the world, it goes without saying, the world takes, and the devil, his whole MO is to take what God put in his word for us. He takes the truth and he flips it around upside down. You know, judgment turned around backwards, truth falling in the streets, that whole thing. That's what he's talking about. You know, you see the injustice that is in our judicial system. And everywhere you go, you know, I heard a thing there today where certain school district somewhere is demanding that their teachers in the schools wish their young Middle Eastern students, the immigrants that are here, the little Muslim kids, wish them a happy or blessed Ramadan, and they need to do it in their language. So you need to learn how to say blessed Ramadan or happy Ramadan or successful Ramadan in their language as the greeting for this time that we're coming into. It's like their twisted up version of the Passover. That's what Ramadan really is. And that's what the commentator was saying. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You know, we can't have prayer. We can't have a Bible. The kids can't pray for their food. You can't even say Merry Christmas or even talk about Santa Claus in schools nowadays because it might offend someone's religious proclivities should they differ from yours. And yet now they're going to demand that their teachers not only wish them this about their religious holiday, but they're going to have to do it in their language. See, it's all turned around backwards. Judgment, justice, all that backwards. That's what the devil does with the truth that's in God's word. And that's what he does with everything that is good. He tries to turn it upside down. And if it's not so blatantly turned upside down, then what he does is he takes and puts just a little poison pill in a bunch of truth, and then we drink it down. But see, then it gets in us, it gets in our mentality and our the way we process our thoughts, and it starts to grow. And then it takes and it starts to work its little fingers and its tentacles down into every facet of our life. And before too awful long, people from the outside looking in can see that our judgment has been affected drastically by the philosophy of the world. We can't see it because we think we're woke. We think we know. We think we see a new way. We think we see a better way. And truth is that we've went literally in the opposite direction than what we think we've went. And no one can commit. I've never seen anybody that has done that that doesn't militantly defend that position. Because they have something that you don't. And they know. And it don't matter, young or old, if they've got experience in it or not, it don't matter. They think they know better than you. But it's the world's philosophy that has worked its way and weaseled its way into their minds. And that's what the devil does. So this matter of you need to love yourself. If you listen to any kind of self-help books or, you know, podcasts or, you know, any kind of anything like that, that's where they begin. You know, it's about self-esteem, self-worth, you know, self-love and what you think, how you feel about yourself and what you think you are worth. And usually the whole thing that they're preaching to you is that you don't have enough self-esteem. You don't have enough self-worth. You don't think you're worthy of anything. But you are. And don't you forget it. And if you don't start treating yourself good first, then how do you expect, you know, you can't pour nothing out of an empty cup. How many times have you heard people say things like that? And what they fail to realize, and it don't matter if they go to church or not, most people, and I've just come to realize this, that 90% of people that go to church, they don't get fed the truth. They get fed a lot of the world's philosophy in a religious, nice little religious blister pack. And it's theirs to do with what they feel they should, or not, whatever they want to do. You get around people, and I know at work, like you talk to a wide variety of viewpoints when it comes to Christianity, and I run into a lot of people in my line of work too, and you deal with them at your work. I mean, we're all around it. We all see, and it's good to see. You know, I know that you listen to some other stuff just to see the other side of the coin. I do the same thing. If we don't, then we're foolish because, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again because I firmly believe this. We all live in a bubble. We like our bubble. It's safe in the bubble. But in the bubble, it don't matter how much truth we hold inside the bubble. It's not just for us in this bubble. And if you get outside that bubble at all, you start to, it's like, I don't know. You get, people walk in their groove, you know, and they don't get out of that groove in life, and you get comfortable in it, and you don't poke your head up every now and then and look around, you'll lose sight of reality and the way people really do think, and it's unbelievable to me, you know. But once again, just like we talked about over there, it doesn't matter whether people are being told the truth or not. When they hear it, whether they agree with it or not, when they hear it, they can't deny that it's the truth. They may reject it. A lot of times that's what they do. They may get angry about it or angry with you. But ultimately, you know, they can't deny the truth. Now, I believe there's a certain level that they can get to in depravity and in reprobate mind where they can know that it's the truth and just be like, Pelosi, where she said, "I reject your facts." You know, I mean, that's where I think you've crossed the line, and you literally believe a lie on purpose. You're willfully ignorant, and you just can't help people that are like that. You know, the only power in the whole universe that could do anything for somebody like that is God. And even he says when they reach a certain point that he turns them over to a reprobate mind. But this matter of loving yourself, that's not right. I mean, that goes without saying. You know, you've heard Dad talk about the old lady that was in the church over there that lost her husband. She was in a depression. She was just depressed. She couldn't seem to pull herself up out of her depression. And she loved the Lord and she loved people, but she was just grieving so bad that she just couldn't seem to get back on her feet. And so she went to the preacher and asked him, "What can I do? What do you suggest?" And he said, "Go home and start making pies." She goes, "What?" He said, "Go home and start making pies. Make three pies tomorrow. And then you think of somebody that you know that would enjoy a pie. Ain't got to be for no reason. Ain't got to be going through a hard time. Just think of somebody that you know that likes your pies. And go by and just drop one off to them. And do that." And she come back a week later and she goes, "You were right." "Well, why?" "Well, because she started doing something for someone. She didn't have nothing to give. Emotionally, she was completely dry. Lost her husband, lost everything that held her whole world together. And yet, in the depths of her despair, she still had something to give. It was something as simple as a pie. We've seen Granny do that, where she would, you know, she struggled for a long time after Pop died. But she got to where the thing that brought her the most joy was to make a dessert and bring it down there to the house for no reason, just because she could. Or to come down and help sort beans or wash eggs or, you know, just crochet 200 wash rags and keep them in a bag to give to somebody that we still use. You know, it was something that she started giving back. She started doing for others. My point that I want to make, and then I'll be done because I've not got a lot to say, but it's this. If you want, you know, we want to try and say, okay, the world says you need to love yourself so that you'll be able to give and love other people. Well, if you want to see the contrast of that or what really it is, what you need to do is recognize the value that you have. Your value. My value. In the eyes of God. I'm not talking about the eyes of men. The reason why people chase their tail all their life and never seem to get nowhere as far as, like, you know, spiritually, even in this life physically, and they just seem to always just be coming up in the back of the line somewhere, all that, is that they don't value themselves because they never think about the value that God puts on them. Here's the deal. If I do what I do to try and change your opinion of me so that I might have more value in your eyes because of what I've sacrificed for you or what I'll do for you or how I'll never say no to you or I'll do whatever it takes to... I mean, you see children do this in school where they don't really know who... You know, you hear people say, oh, they're trying to find themselves, figure themselves out or whatever. But really, it's sad because what it winds up being is that, you know, for whatever reason, that kid doesn't feel like they have much value. So they'll literally be... Say, do, take, drink, participate, doesn't matter, whatever, in order for other people to look at them, and in their own mind, their value in their eyes goes up. You know, if you follow me? And it never works that way. It works the other way. You devalue yourself. When you do that, when a girl that comes out on the scene and she's pure and she's never been messed with, and you see her throw all that away for the acceptance of someone else, she devalues herself. But in her mind, she's thinking, if I do this, my value in his eyes will go up. And it does not work that way. Never, never. And that idea, that concept is carried on into life, in your job, into your marriage, with your relationship with your kids, the relationship that develops between you and your parents after you're grown, all that kind of stuff. You know? There's things going on right now that is exactly this thing, right, that we're talking about. You know, someone doesn't feel valued, but it isn't for the right reasons. It's for the reasons that they have said. See, it all begins with how God views me. I mean, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. He is good to the unthankful and the evil. God puts value on the worst kind of person. You know, you've heard it said from the time you were little, and it sounds cliche, but it's really, you know, it's a profound thought. If I'd have been the only person that ever was on this earth and sin was present, Jesus would have came and died and did everything he did for me. Just one person. That's how much he values me and you and you and you. So the value that God puts on me is higher than the value that anybody else could ever have for me. And if I look at myself and say, you know what? The Lord values me. There's a value that he puts on me. Not my worth, because worth is what something's worth that you could buy it for. But the value that's in something is something that goes, it transcends worth. You know, is there something monetary that Jesus could have traded that would have done what he has done for us with salvation and forgiveness of sins other than his life? No. So see, value transcends worth in this matter. And when I look at me and I say, man, I feel like a loser. I'm just the biggest loser that ever was. And I can't seem to do nothing right. You know, and everything I put my hand to seems to fail, and I just, I'm just dragging all the time, and I just seem like, well, what am I judging my value by? I'm determining or I'm determining my value by what others think of me. I'm literally, I'm confusing my value before God with the worth that I am to other people. You know? You ever heard somebody say, you ever been trying to be friends with that guy? Yeah, ain't worth it. What do you mean? Well, you know, some people are just really hard to be friends with. Just about can't be. And when you think about what you invest in being their friend and what happens to you after you put yourself out there, it's just not worth it. But here's the deal. If I value, I'm not talking about loving myself. I'm talking about valuing myself. If I will recognize my value the way God sees me, then I'm going to react to that in an unselfish way. I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, look at me. I'm highly favored and blessed. Woohoo! No. It's going to make me humble. Because you know what? I'm not worthy. He values me, but I'm not worth it. But he thinks so. And because he values me that much, it makes me want to try and live like I'm worth it. I'll never attain the worth of the value he puts on me. But it makes me want to please him with my life because he values me way more than I'm worth. Now, roll that over into this life. Most people, when they say, I just had to take a me day. The kids was getting on my nerves and I just couldn't take it no more. And my husband or my wife, they wouldn't shut up. And I just took it as long as I could. And so I've literally seen them sitting in the restaurant or something. A woman sitting there by herself looking at her phone, just eating her salad or whatever she's doing. She's having a me day. You know? And everybody else, you know, you need to understand, when you love yourself and you indulge that, because I'm worth it, who pays for that? It always comes at the expense of someone else. Someone else makes your me day possible. You know, Liza, if you took off and had a me day, somebody would have to watch your kids. I mean, it's just a reality. It'd be nice. A me day would be nice sometimes, I'm sure. But here's the deal. Somebody else would have to facilitate that to happen. It'd be the same for any of us. You know, even if I take off and just go somewhere, I just done got to the point now, so working at home so much for so many years here. If I leave to go, I don't know, go do a job or something somewhere else and I'm gone all day long, you know, I almost feel like I've done something wrong because when I get home, they're all like, oh, you're finally home. And of course, I do have the only vehicle we have, so they're afoot until I come home. But here's the deal. When someone says, you need to really love yourself because you can't love someone else unless you do, in theory, that sounds like, you know, you're right. I'm wrung plumb out. I don't have nothing. I just don't feel like I have nothing to give. So they go and they love themselves a little bit. You know, there's a certain guy that we know, and on Facebook it cracks me up because he's always going and rewarding himself for a very minor accomplishment that he has accomplished. You know, I treated myself to a steak dinner because I'm worth it, or had a good week at work, so I treated myself to a. And the sad fact of the matter is he's all alone. Yeah. He doesn't have nobody to celebrate with or anything like that because he's such a selfish person, and he's so self-absorbed. Nobody can stand him. So I guess the only friend he really has is himself. He loves himself, but here's the problem. When you only love yourself and you're going to invest in you so you can give to other people, that sounds so good, but it never completes that. You never complete that cycle. You only get as far as loving yourself. And because people that will indulge that in their life are selfish people, you know, you look around at the pile of stuff you've got around you that you've loved yourself with, and you're like, hey, I kind of like this. You know, why would I want to give it all away to someone else? I mean, well, I thought that was the ultimate goal, was that you were going to love yourself so that you would be able to love someone else. But nobody ever does that. And if they do love someone else, quote unquote, it is in a manipulative way so that in the around the horn it brings some gain back to them because it makes them feel good about loving them somebody else. So ultimately, they literally will love someone else because it makes them feel better about themselves. It is completely driven by selfishness. And someone who lives that way, just start paying attention. They always wind up being a bitter, cynical, angry, lonely person. They don't have anyone. They don't want anyone. If they did, they wouldn't let you know, because that would make them look weak. And they're not going to do that because they've built this life for themselves. And they've done it because they used the world's philosophy and said, I need to fill me up so that I can pour over onto someone else. And the only time you ever hear of that happening is the Lord pouring out onto you until it's pressed down, shaken down, running over. That's the only time you hear anything about that, and God's the one that does that. If I will acknowledge the value that God puts on me, number one, I'm going to be humble about it. It'll never puff me up. It'll never make me proud or make me look down my nose at someone else who's not so fortunate as me. Well, I guess God doesn't love you as much. Oh, wait, no, that's not true, see? God values everyone the same. And because he does, and he values me that way when I don't deserve it, then it's just going to be my knee jerk. It's going to be what I learn to be. Because of that, I'm going to feel the same way about other people. Now, that's a mouthful. I know. Because, you know, there's a big difference between saying it here and then walking out the door and going and doing it. Because it's real easy to love somebody that loves you back. It's real easy to put value on someone who puts value on you. But, you know, I said something about it Sunday there, but, you know, those homeless guys that I seen over there in Salt Lake, nobody puts any value on them. Won't even talk to them on the street. They have no value. Society, they have no value in the eyes of society. They're not even good for picking up trash or nothing. They don't even try to get them to do nothing like that. Nah. Nope. They're just like stray dogs or something. But God values them. And see, if I'll look at them the way that I know the Lord looks at me, because that's really what Christians are supposed to do, ain't it? I mean, hereby shall men know that ye are my disciples, that ye have love one for another. That ain't just the beautiful people, and that ain't just the people who are so lovable, or the people that reciprocate it. You know, our attitude towards humanity ought to be one of, you have value. See, if I go out there with a message of, y'all need to love yourself. Love yourself this week. Do something good for yourself. You're worth it. You deserve it. Then how's that going to benefit anybody but you? The buck stops right there with you. If you go out and do what I've said, then you only do for you, and that's it. That's the end of it. But if I tell you, look, you have value to the Lord. He died for you. He thinks you're worthy of his love. Now go out there and show someone else the value that they have in Christ. And you go out there and do that, not only is it going to, it's just the gift that's going to keep on giving it, keep on duplicating itself. But it's also going to bless your heart because you're doing something to honor your Father. It's not about you and your value. It's about the value he places on you that you don't deserve, but he does it anyway because he loves you. And see, that value, that message, that don't cost anybody else anything. It don't even cost us anything. To go out here and make somebody understand the value that they have in Christ, and because of that, the value they have from us, the value that I have for you, that I think you have worth, you have value. If you can project that onto people out of you because of what the Lord's done for you, do you reckon that'd be a more of a blessing to a lot more people
than trying to get them to selfishly keep to themselves things to make them feel better about themselves, or to go out and do something to indulge in the lust of their flesh in some way? You know, why is our society in such a screwed up mess? Well, because that's what we teach our little bitty kids from the time they're born. You know, what is the, and I hate this saying, it's so, it almost seems vulgar to me, but it's this thing that they, you do you. I'm going to do me, you do you. Which basically means I'm not going to do anything that I don't want to do. I'm not going to do anything that doesn't benefit me in some way. And I'm okay if you do the same thing, because I'm so wrapped up in me over here that you ain't even going to enter into my picture, buddy. So you do your thing and I'll do mine, and we'll just stay out of my business. I'll stay out of yours. All that kind of stuff. That's all little sparks that come off of this attitude of loving yourself. Because at the end of the day, you are sitting on the throne, and you're the one that's getting lavished on, and you're the one, even if you're doing it to yourself. And it doesn't glorify the Lord at all. Don't honor Him, you know. He came to this earth and didn't even have a house. You know, he was a homeless man. And they felt the same way about him. Ain't nobody put no worth on him. Even his disciples didn't get it. That woman came and broke that alabaster box of ointment and put on him. And his disciples looked around and said, "What in the world did she do that for?" Well, I mean, she was doing it to Jesus. The one that they knew was the Messiah, the Son of God. And they still said, you know, we could have took that and sold that, and we could have done a lot of good with that money. You know, we could have done a lot to help the poor. And, you know, Jesus said, "Y'all, you know, she recognizes my value. And you're just looking at what that was worth." How many times do we look at what somebody's worth versus their value? And, you know, look, this matter, I mean, you look around and you see the kids that throw their life away for the approval or the acceptance of someone else. You see young ladies and young men that do that with you know, promiscuity and poor choices in life. You see people marry wrong and their marriages end in divorce, and there's kids involved, and it's just a big mess. It's just a big mess everywhere you look. And you say, "Boy, the world's just really going down the drain. You know, why? Why?" And the world says, "Well, it's because they don't feel like they're worth anything. They have no self-worth. They have no self-esteem. They have no self-value. And it's all because their mom and dad yelled at them when they were a kid and told them they were stupid. And, you know, they took away their self-confidence. And now they can't even go out here and get a job. And they have anxiety problems. And they have social issues. And they can't, you know, look at someone when they talk to them, and, you know, look them in the face to talk to them. Or they struggle with social anxiety and angst, and they have a hard time holding down jobs because of that, and blah, 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 blah. And it's always somebody else's fault, and it's never nothing you can really do about it except take these pills. Here you go, take these pills." When, in all honesty, it doesn't matter if your mom and dad literally abandon you on the side of the road. If your faith and your value that you recognize about yourself is based on the Lord and how He values you, it doesn't matter what folks do to you. That's why Jesus could just bow up and head on to the cross, despite what people thought about Him, despite what even His closest brethren there just didn't quite understand yet. He could do it because it wasn't about them. And whether they accepted Him or not. You know, to read His prayer in the garden. Read His prayer there before they went to Gethsemane. When He talked to His Father. And He absolutely understood what His value was in the eyes of His Father. That prodigal son, he left on his daddy's dime. He loved himself, and it cost his dad. And until he realized his value in his father's eyes, he never got up out of that hog pen and left. What did he say? Doesn't my father have many hired servants that are living better than me? I'll just go back. I'll just be a servant. He knew enough about his father to know that he had enough value that he might let him be a servant. He underestimated the value that his dad had on him, though. Just like we do. We underestimate our own value. It's why we seem to, it's like we beat ourselves at our own game before we ever start playing. Lots of times we get in our own head and we fail before we ever even start trying. Because look, if you really did own the idea of the value that your Heavenly Father has for you, you think you could go out here with a little more confidence in Him to face the world, to face the day? You better believe it. Absolutely. But when you tear yourself down because of the small amount of worth that you think you have in everyone else's eyes, then of course you're going to fail. The world has all kinds of little buzz phrases, setting yourself up for success and, the power of positive thinking and all that kind of stuff. And you can rah-rah-ree yourself as much as you want to. And it might work for some people sometimes for a while. But it doesn't compare to the power that's locked up inside the value that your Heavenly Father has for you. And, you're going to be one of those people that just chases your tail all your life and lives a selfish life and winds up bitter? Or are you going to be ever learning, never able to come to the knowledge of the truth in this matter? I mean, it's a simple concept and it's not deep theology. I just don't like hearing a one-sided story from the world when I know that there's a biblical principle there that the devil has taken and perverted. And everyone thinks that it's a real good thing to go do, to love yourself. And in the end, it makes them a bitter, lonely, empty person. When really, if you'll just do what I've said here and understand your value in God's eyes, and then use that as the springboard to jump off into life with, the outcome's going to be completely different. It's a message of hope, you see. I know a man, and he felt a calling on his life one time to go to a mission field, and he did not answer that call. He was convinced by certain members of his family it wouldn't be the best thing for him to do, so he didn't go. But he decided, look, I really want to go, but it's just not going to be able to happen. But I'm going to stay here. And he said, I'm going to make lots of money. I'm going to be good at my job. And I'm going to make a lot so that I can give a lot. And I'll take care of these people on the, I will. So he did. Well, he did part of that. He threw himself into his work. And he was very successful at his job. Made a lot of money. His farm's paid for. He's got a bank full of money. Everything is wonderful except his life. Because, doing that didn't bring him any joy at all. The Lord wanted him to do a certain thing and he put value on something else. And that's what he pursued. Did kind of like Cain did in a lot of ways. And in the end, it's made him bitter. And he is surrounded by family, and none of them really like him that much. His own kids, I know for a fact, don't really like him that much. Because he's a hateful person. He's bitter. You know why? Because he never fulfilled the joy that the Lord had for him by doing God's will for his life. He followed his own path. Because it just made more sense. If he'd went the other way, there was a chance he could lose everything. And man, he just wasn't willing to do it. Don't be that way. I mean, it's a simple idea here, and I believe that there's a lot that the Lord has in store for us. And I'm not preaching prosperity gospel.
I'm just saying, wouldn't you like to go through life and just enjoy some happiness in life? I mean, you think that the Lord don't want you to be happy? Now, I'm not saying go out and get a bunch of stuff and that'll make you happy. No. How about being happy in Him? How about the love that He has for you makes you happy? And most people can't even grasp a hold of that because they're just trying to be happy by loving themselves. And that ain't never going to work. You'll love yourself right into loneliness. You'll love yourself right into unhappiness. You might have a lot of stuff. I know another guy, and that's what he told me. You know, they have no children. They got a lot of money. And that's what he told me. He said, I've got every toy that you can have. I've got houses everywhere. I've got things that I can go do. I can go do whatever I want to do, whenever I want to do it. You know what he does with his time mostly? Sits in the house. Stares at the walls. You know? He chased that all his life because he thought it would bring him happiness. He loved himself so that he could have to give to other people. And, you know, he lived a long time just sitting on his pile of money. Now, he's starting to realize that giving it away brings him much more happiness than getting it did. So you see him doing it a little bit. And you want to know a little something? That man's lost as a goose. Does not know the Lord at all. And he gets it a little bit, you know. It's how powerful the love of God is. That even a lost person can take those precepts that are in this Bible and live similar to them. And their life will at least be better quality of life. A lot of times you'll see that. Now what if you did it right? You have value. It's not nothing to be ashamed of. You know, the Lord put a lot of value when He gave His only Son for you. I don't reckon you could value something much more than that. He said that He gave His blood. He gave His life. You're His bride. He put more value on you than on anything else in this universe that He ever made. And you ought to recognize that and honor Him by honoring that. And then take that value that He's bestowed upon you and take and do that for other people too. So fulfill ye the law of Christ. You know? This is how men are going to know that we're His disciple. We have love one for another. That's it.